I call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Policy Committee to order on Thursday, March 5th, 2026. I would like to begin with our standard committee protocol. There are a few housekeeping items. Everyone here must be seated when they are in the hearing room. There will be no standing or sitting in the walkways or aisles. If you need accommodations, please consult with the sergeant staff or the state trooper in the room. Signs are not permitted in the hearing room or at the testifiers table. We ask that you please leave all signs outside of the committee room. Clapping and other disruptions are not allowed. Additionally, all testifiers must adhere to the 2-minute time limit so we can keep the meeting on time and hear from as many people as possible. I would move the minutes for February 24th, 2026. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Chair Nash?
Madam Chair, yeah, just for members who are, for folks who have not seen that before, maybe give a rationale as to why we're approving the minutes this late in the game.
I would encourage you to do that, as I don't know what you're referencing.
Well, just as to why it took so long to get the minutes to where we are now.
They just had a minor correction that needed to be made, but.
Always like to talk about transparency, Madam Chair. So that folks don't have questions.
Well, the minutes have been posted for everyone to read. So if you have any questions, we're Mary Frances.
Hi. My Frances is spelled with an E, and you have an I on here. So.
Okay. So
thank you.
please correct the spelling of the members.
We're going to have to hold off on that then, I guess.
Or we can have an amendment to the minutes and adopt them with the corrected spelling of the member's name. Thank you, Mary Frances, for catching that. Okay.
Madam Chair, I believe that Representative Luger-Nicolai has got something as well.
Oh, Representative.
Yeah, there's too many A's in mine also.
Okay, so let's hold off on these minutes and we will correct this, ensure that all members' names are spelled properly. Thank you very much. Okay, so moving the minutes of March 3rd, are the same issues in March 3rd? All right, we will hold off on the approval of the minutes. So I will withdraw my motion that the minutes be adopted. Okay, next we will move on to House File 30. Oh.
March 3rd.
Oh, no, the same misspellings are available in the names. Yeah, so we will hold off on all minutes. Okay. Representative Long, welcome to the committee. We will have House File 3477. I will move that bill be before us and be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Long, I understand you have an A4 amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, it's an author's amendment. It would delete subdivision 2, which was an amendment that I accepted in the Judiciary Committee in the last stop. But since the bill wasn't engrossed, it didn't make it into this bill. And then also there was some question in the last stop around the retroactivity. And so we agreed with our Senate authors to make that clear with the language in this amendment.
Okay, so this is an amendment that you told Judiciary that you would bring forward.
The first half of the amendment was adopted in Judiciary, and the second half is responding to a question that was raised in Judiciary.
All right. Members, generally I move straight to adoption of the author's amendment, but because this was approved in another committee and to match with the Senate, is there any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of adopting the author's amendment, the A4, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A4 is adopted. Please, if you'll speak to your bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good morning, committee members. Each of us takes an oath when we are sworn in to uphold the Constitution. And I hope we can all agree that when a citizen's constitutional rights have been violated, that there should be a remedy. But there is a gap in current federal statutes and case law that means that many constitutional violations by federal actors fall through the cracks and don't lead to accountability. The bill I'm proposing today, the Universal Constitutional Remedies Act, would patch these constitutional holes by establishing a civil remedy when a constitutional right has been violated by a government actor. This mirrors what's been in place for state and local actors since 1874 under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983. The concept of expanding these claims to all government actors, including federal, has been around for at least 40 years, and at least 6 other states have these laws in effect. A couple have had them in effect for over a decade. So while the idea is not new, the recent context of federal government immigration enforcement in Minnesota has made plain the need for this law. There has been bipartisan acknowledgement of the widespread violations of constitutional rights that we've seen in our state under Operation Metro Surge. Courts have found such violations as well. They have found First Amendment violations, including retaliation for protected speech activities. They found Fourth Amendment violations, including unreasonable searches and seizures. They have found Fifth Amendment due process violations, including depriving detainees of their right to counsel. And when a citizen has had property damage, like their door being broken in violation of the Fourth Amendment, or physical harm in retaliation for free speech in violation of the First Amendment, or most tragically, loss of life in violation of the Fifth Amendment, there must be a remedy. And the public agrees. When asked, in your opinion, do you think federal officers and agents should be granted immunity from prosecution for any unlawful activity during immigration enforcement actions? The answer was overwhelming. 88% of Minnesotans said no, federal agents should not be granted immunity and should be held accountable. And this bill before you would be far less than criminal prosecution. It's simply civil liability. And this does two things. It makes whole the individuals who were harmed, and it provides some accountability by encouraging governments to change their policies, such as better training their employees to follow the Constitution. This bill would apply not to a particular type of action or actor. It is not limited to immigration enforcement or even to federal actors. It would protect against constitutional violations by any future administration, be they Democratic or Republican. Put simply, if we believe in the Constitution, then we need to protect and enforce its rights. That has been available for state and local constitutional violations for 152 years. This bill would be an important step to apply the same protections to Minnesotans for constitutional violations by federal actors. I appreciated the broad bipartisan vote on the floor to bring the bill to this committee today, and I'm hopeful we can move the bill out of committee to continue this important discussion.
Thank you. I'm aware of no other amendments to the bill, so we can move on to member discussion to the bill. Anyone have any comments or discussion? Representative Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Long, how does this bill avoid preemption under the Supremacy Clause, given that federal immigration enforcement is exclusively federal domain? If you could just expound on that a little bit.
Thank you. Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Davis. So the bill is not specific to immigration. It is for all constitutional violations of state or federal actors, and it applies evenly to all actors, be they state or federal. So you don't have a supremacy clause issue in that you aren't being inconsistent with what you are applying to federal versus state. Also, it is only enforcing constitutional rights. So we're not getting into an instance where the state is having to enforce federal law. We are enforcing the Constitution, which is the supreme law. And so this is furthering federal constitutional rights and doesn't get into supremacy clause issues.
Vice Chair Davis.
Yeah, you want to sue federal law enforcement here. How does it not have to do with immigration? And your whole testimony was based around Operation Metro Surge. How does this not, please expound on that. How does this not have to do with immigration?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Davis. So some other states, when they have passed their laws, it has been specific to federal officers or specific to immigration. The law that we have mirrors almost exactly 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, which is not specific to any particular type of constitutional violation or particular action or actors. And that is why our bill, I think, believe is more constitutionally sound than some of the bills that have been challenged in other states.
A last follow-up?
Well,
I'm going to move on to any other members that you have.
Madam Chair, just the other day I was co-vice chair. We allowed for actually a member on that side of the aisle to speak for a long time twice.
Okay.
And we had a lot on our agenda that day as well.
Thank you, Representative Davis. If I ask you if you have a follow-up. Do you have a follow-up? Please move forward.
Do you believe that law enforcement has the right? You know, we have laws in this land that were passed by Congress and that were signed into law by the President of the United States. Do you believe that federal law enforcement has the authority to come into Minnesota and execute federal law?
Chair, Leader Long.
Thank you for the question, Representative Davis. Yes, they have the ability to enforce federal law. What they do not have the right to do is violate the Constitution. And I hope that we could all agree that constitutional rights should be protected, and that's all this bill would do.
Yeah, I absolutely do believe that we should be upholding the Constitution, Representative Long. And I look forward to you helping us protect the Constitution, especially the Second Amendment. Thank you, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other member discussion? Representative Choi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What gap, Representative Long, in current law is this intending to fill?
Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Joy. So at the, as I mentioned, Section 1983 has been in place for over 150 years, and that applies to only state and local actors. Congress, in its wisdom, did not apply it to itself when it passed the law. It was passed under Reconstruction, and so it was, you know, attempting to deal with some of the activities at the state level at this time. The goal here, and the goal in the other states that have passed that, would be to expand those constitutional protections to federal actors as well, and do so in an even-handed way. It would protect all constitutional rights. It would even protect the Second Amendment if those rights were violated by state or federal actors. And it would apply even-handedly to state, local, and federal actors.
Representative Choi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Long, you know, when you first started your speech out, you started out by saying we all took an oath to protect people, to be here to protect people. You know, as we look at today, the fraud that's going away, that's hurting people. You guys are focusing on ICE. We're going to focus on fraud. We're sitting today seeing people not affordable in Minnesota because of the fraud this administration has allowed to happen under their watch. The OIG bill has not passed because this administration continues to do their thing. When we talk about protecting the oath and you guys want to use that as your zingers out on the floor, here's what's happening. Governor Walz has let things get stolen from Minnesota taxpayers without any due process, just letting it fly. We should be writing laws talking about this fraud that's going on, holding people accountable. But yet, the other side of the aisle comes in here just focusing directly on ICE and what they're going to do for immigration. For Metro, not much in rural Minnesota. They're focusing on Metro. This is where we got to start looking when we're writing these laws and looking at holding people accountable. Governor Walz needs to be held accountable. Thank you.
Representative Joy. Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, is there a fiscal note that's been requested for this?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is that a fiscal note has been requested, yes. I will say that I don't believe that there would be a cost to the state because it overlaps with the current liability that the state actors face under Section 1983.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, Representative Long, I will say this. We took a vote to move this to this committee because we wanted to show you that we were willing to move pieces of legislation to different committees in order to have conversations, not necessarily to approve its further continuance, but that we could have that conversation, unlike what you all have done with the OIG bill. But I'm going to ask for a roll call on this, Madam Chair, and recommend a no vote.
Thank you. And a roll call has been requested. A roll call will be given. Any final comments? Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To my Republican colleagues, I would just ask that you think about what this bill is actually trying to do, which is to protect constitutional right violations. Those are not unique to the Metro. We've seen constitutional rights violations across the state. This certainly is written in a context, which is the constitutional rights violations that we've seen over the last several months. But the bill itself would apply far beyond that, and it is simply establishing the basic principle that there needs to be a remedy when constitutional rights are violated. This would not be holding individual law enforcement officers accountable. It would go to the governmental entities to pay for any damages that the state found. And we've seen in the 1983 context that that has been helpful to make sure that families are made whole and to encourage local governments to follow the Constitution. So I'd ask for support.
Thank you. And I'll renew my motion that House File 3477, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Chair Cleveland votes aye.
Chair Cleveborn, aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Davis, no. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, no.
Representative Anderson, no. Representative Clardy?
Yes.
Representative Clardy, yes. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, yes. Representative Jones, excused. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Kraft?
Aye.
Representative Kraft, aye. Representative Nicolai?
Aye.
Representative Golay, aye. Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Quam, no. Representative Sexton?
No.
Representative Sexton, no. Chair, there are 6 ayes, 7 nays, 1 excused.
With the vote of 6 ayes, 7 nays, 1 excused, the motion is not adopted. Thank you, Representative Long. Next, we will have Representative Howard with House File 3480.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't get a chance to ask you before the first vote was taken, but hasn't it been the custom of this committee that when a bill is awaiting a possible fiscal note, it would not leave the possession of this committee?
I would like to remind the committee that your side of the aisle did refer a bill out of committee without a fiscal note.
And Madam Chair.
Chair Nash.
Madam Chair, it was stated by both the department and that it was not going to have a fiscal impact. Talking about the bill we had the other day, so but thank you for talking about that, but it left because it wasn't going to have a fiscal impact, because it was clear from the Secretary of State that the liaisons that were embedded in the different departments were going to just do this because they exist already, that it was going to be a formalization of their role. And I would remind the chair that in the previous biennia you did this pretty much on any day that ended in Y. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Howard, I will move House File 3480 be before the committee and be re-referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you,
please,
Chair.
Discuss your bill.
Thank you, Chair Cleavon, Chair Nash. I'm glad to be back in state government.
Well, I understand you have an author's amendment.
I do have an author's amendment. Yes.
I will move the A2 be before the committee.
The author's amendment gets the bill in the shape I would prefer. It fills in a dollar amount for the study and add some clarifying language around timing around the study.
Thank you for taking care of the fiscal portion of this bill. Members, is there any discussion to the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A2, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Now to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Chair Cleavon. House File 3480 is frankly a very straightforward and simple bill, which calls for an independent economic impact study of the impacts statewide of Operation Metro Surge. No matter your feelings about what has occurred during Operation Metro Surge, I would hope we could have some shared understanding that this was an unprecedented event that occurred in the state of Minnesota that did impact our citizens. Again, no matter what your inclinations are about what has occurred over the past many months related to Operation Metro Surge. So what this bill seeks to do is what we should always be doing in this legislature, which is to be curious and ask questions and get hard data to inform our legislative policymaking to best advocate for our constituents all across the state. We do have a bevy of anecdotal evidence and the beginnings and pieces of study to show significant economic harm related to Operation Metro Surge. A study by the North Star Prosperity Project is estimating hundreds of millions of dollars in lost wages. We're seeing hundreds of small businesses that have had to close or significantly reduce operations. We've had entire sectors turned on its head, from the agriculture economy to housing and construction and many others. Child care has been a sector of our economy that's been incredibly damaged. a study showed that nearly 30% of childcare centers had to close or reduce operations due to either families not able to visit or actual threats from ICE, as we've seen them target childcare centers. Our schools have seen economic impacts, of course, as a result. Our local governments have experienced millions of dollars in additional unforeseen costs, in particular in local law enforcement costs. And I know it was raised earlier about, you know, the sort of where this has taken place. The reality is there's been reported economic impacts all across the state, including Moorhead, Faribault, Wilmer, Albert Lea, Alexandria, Grand Rapids, and the list goes on and on. The operation, although the title of it was Operation Metro Surge, this was really a surge that affected all of their state, and we should try to learn more information. I'm going to have a few testifiers to share more information and studies, but I wanted to, it's in your packet, I wanted to highlight one specific letter that was sent to you all by someone from Wilmer. His name was Christopher Gomez, and he lives in Wilmer, where his family owns El Tapatio, a restaurant. This past January, two ICE agents off duty entered the restaurant, and everyone felt pretty intense about that. Christopher went to his father, who owns the restaurant, and asked what they should do, and his father said we should serve them. They're patrons in our restaurant. A few hours later, as the restaurant closed, ICE agents descended upon the owner and father and mother of this restaurant. If folks hadn't been on the scene, the car would have been left in the middle of the street. Both the mother and father were detained. In just a few days, they were sent to Texas. The father was able to return home. His mother was deported. The revenue alone of the loss of his restaurants totals thousands of dollars, and now this family is trying to figure out how to recover. That's just one of thousands of stories all across the state. This occurred in Wilmer, and I wanted to highlight the testimony of Christopher as well. And with that, I would welcome my testifiers.
Thank you very much. We have two testifiers who have signed up to testify. I have Laura Santiago, followed by Rachel Sayre. Please, if you'll join us at the table, state your name for the record, please, and begin your testimony. Ms. Santiago.
Good morning. Thank you, everybody. I am Laura Santiago. I will be reading here on behalf of Christopher Gomez. Chair Clairvoyant and members of committee, hello. My name is Christopher Gomez. I live in Wilmer, Minnesota, where my family owns and runs El Tapatio. I'm testifying in support of HF 3480. This past January, two tables of ICE agents came into a restaurant without uniforms. Various committee members confirmed those were agents as their vehicles sat outside. When the agents were inside our business, we felt like we were under surveillance. I told my dad right away, and he responded, "They're off duty. What can we do? Just serve them." So we did. I left the restaurant at 3 p.m. that night. My parents stayed behind to close the restaurant at 8:30 p.m. That's when the worst happened. As soon as they left, ICE followed my parents for a block or two. They were detained near church by a middle school. My mom was able to call us when it happened, and my sister and I showed up. If we had not come, ICE would have left my dad's truck running in the middle of the street. They handed his keys to a woman nearby, and they left everything there. Children's car seats were left in the back. My mom's purse was still inside. They just took my parents and left everything behind. In just a few days, my parents were transported to a detention facility in Texas. Another month later, my dad was released, but my mom was deported. One of our cooks, who had also been detained, was deported almost immediately. My siblings and I had to take over the restaurant. In revenue alone, we lost at least $3,000 during the days we were closed. During the period of having to open reduced hours, closing at 5 p.m. instead of 9 p.m., we likely lost half of our normal revenue for those days. And beyond that, business has dropped because people were and continue to be afraid to leave their homes. I cannot begin to comprehend the economic impact of the surge on my community. It's important that we fully understand the damage. Please support an economic impact study. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Now we will move on to Rachel Sayray. Thank you. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, Chair Nash, and committee members. My name is Rachel Sayer. I am the Director of Emergency Management for the City of Minneapolis. Since early December, my office has been responding to a range of emergency needs across the City of Minneapolis. We work across sectors and with stakeholders to respond to immediate needs in our community. Last month, we released a preliminary impact assessment examining the impacts of Operation Metro Surge across four key sectors of food, shelter, livelihoods, and mental health. The impact assessment found 76,000 residents just in the city of Minneapolis in immediate need of food assistance, $47 million in lost wages for people who were afraid to leave their homes to go to work, $81 million in lost revenue for small businesses, nearly $5 million in lost revenue due to hotel cancellations through the summer, and $15.7 million in rental assistance needs. This is a point-in-time assessment for 1 month in my city alone. These communicate the scale and scope of impact. We know that urgent needs continue and will continue for several months, and once we are past urgent needs, we will be looking at months and years of recovery. As we all know, there are no lines between living in Minneapolis and working, dining, or shopping in any other city in Minnesota. A statewide assessment of the impacts of Operation Metro Surge is critical for all of us, wherever we live and work, so that we have a statewide view of impacts, so that we know what resources are needed to recover, and so that we can plan together on how to recover as a whole. Thank you to Representative Howard for bringing this bill forward, and thank you to the committee for giving me the opportunity to share our support today.
Thank you very much. And we will move to member discussion on the bill as amended. Representative Klasnick, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Howard, how would we determine the entity to do this study? In line 1.7, it says a nonpartisan entity. How would we determine what entity would provide this?
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. Thank you, Representative Kosnick. The Office of Minnesota Management Budget would solicit proposals with nonpartisan entities, so they would make the determination. We were purposeful in putting nonpartisan entity into the language because we think an independent economic analysis is warranted. There are a host of, for-profit entities that do kind of this kind of complex economic analysis. And, you know, really trusted folks, the Minneapolis Federal Reserve is another entity. I feel confident based on track record we could get a good group of folks to provide and do the analysis.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. I appreciate what's in the language. I think the practicality, I have big doubts that it would be a nonpartisan entity. Even the Federal Reserve has partisanship within it. But the other concern I have to the committee is spending another $500,000 to have a study. I think there are other entities that probably may research this on their own anyways. They will probably be partisan on either side or maybe some less partisan. Think tanks will look into this anyways. Representative Howard, once you get the study, a $500,000 study, then what?
Representative Howard, and I'm going to ask that we keep questions tight because we have a very full agenda today. Please go ahead.
Chair Cleavorn, Representative Kosnick, as is often the case, that gives us as the legislature more complete, full information to better legislate, to better respond to the needs in the short term, long term for our state.
Thank you very much. Quick follow-up?
Yeah, just to close it out from my perspective. So I'm not going to support this. We're going to spend $500,000 on a study that I think the impact would be questionable from either side of the aisle, depending on who did it. But it's going to lead to probably some bill that says we need $100 million, or we heard from the city of Minneapolis of their own impact study that they did on their own, not $500,000. But then we're going to have a bill put before us for $100 million, $200 million, maybe a billion, whatever amount that you, some author might want. And then we're going to be down the same road of the promise grants that we just saw this week, where very questionable grants being handed out to people that aren't even in business anymore or have business licenses. So I think this is just heading us down the road, wasting $500,000 to eventually waste more money on more fraud-ridden programs, and I don't think that's the route that Minnesotans want us to go.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. I know that there are 24 suburban mayors who are very interested in this data. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. And to that point, I am one of those suburban districts, and I will tell you the impact to my suburban community has been significant. We have folks who can't open their businesses at all, who've completely lost their revenue. We have folks where we have businesses where the owner is now manning the grill because even though his employees are legal U.S. residents, they're too afraid to come into work. We have folks who are, if you've been through the businesses in my community, sometimes they look like a ghost town lately. They have for some time. And just for context, my suburban community is the seventh fastest growing city in the entire state of Minnesota. We have the second largest amount of retail in the entire state. And we have, if you ask my mayor, the largest number of restaurants in the entire state. So what happens in my businesses, in my local businesses, has a direct impact not only on our city, but on our local businesses, on our taxpayers. My community is deeply concerned about these economic impacts because that impacts the revenues generated by my city, the ability for us to fill out our own budget and pay for all the nice things that we have. And that makes a big, big difference. So, and it's very significant for us. So I would just suggest that, you know, I feel like in this case, we have a lot of mayors, and not just Minneapolis and St. Paul, that are very interested in understanding what those economic impacts are and how we address those concerns moving forward. And so I want to thank you, Representative Howard, for bringing the bill forward.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I'm trying to understand, because a big portion of the contributing factors to what happened, I would assume that this group is going to look at the majority of the states that didn't have the activities and costs incurred, didn't have the violent mobs, and what did our state and local officials do differently than these other states? You know, was part of this cost because law enforcement wasn't allowed? In fact, there's evidence of recalling and telling officers not to respond to incidents. I've seen video on the TV of mobs tearing into and damaging a hotel and law enforcement standing by and, you know, doing nothing. Is the bill as structured going to look at what should the state and the officials have done to not have the problem that made Minnesota an outlier in this country? Is that part of your bill?
Very briefly, Representative Howard.
Chair Cleavorn, this is an economic impact study. I would welcome an expansion and more of a maybe a January 6th style, take a full picture look, but this is a focus on economic impact study. But, you know, given kind of outlandish framing like that, maybe more study is warranted.
We're not going to use words like outlandish. That's not respectful to the members of our committee. Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because honestly, if we're looking at and addressing, we need to understand the factors, because that would also help us understand where were the causes of the costs. I'm aware, with talking with sheriffs in my area over the years, that response time highly impacts the not just the possible costs or damage, but the prevention of escalation to a point of where things get out of hand. So yeah, I'm just disappointed that we're not looking at the real factors so that in the future we don't incur these situations. Plus, if you're looking at the costs, to not look at the causes and proportional responsibilities of the costs incurred is, I think, lacking a true study. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you had mentioned that this is in the best interests for our constituents across the state. You're taking $500,000 to do an economic study, impact study, on federal law enforcement trying to do their job in our communities when we have local officials encouraging people to put their bodies on the line to impede federal law enforcement when they're just trying to do their job. In fact, we even know that there's manuals being passed out and even a confession of a state rep saying that they took part in these manuals and distributing these manuals, teaching them how to impede ICE, not just observe them or record them. Actually, I've seen the video, actually impede them. You want to do an economic impact study on law enforcement being impeded and how that affect our local communities. I'm going to tell you, people across this state, you want to know what they would like to have an economic impact study on? The fraud that's going on in our state. Here you're bringing forth a bill that's going to spend $500,000 of the taxpayers' money when they're wondering where their billions and billions of dollars have gone in fraud. And you talked about child care centers being shut down. Yeah, I know a lot about that because across the state in rural Minnesota, the state comes in and they're very good at inspecting and shutting down daycare centers. But down in the metro area, daycare centers that aren't even real daycare centers are allowed to thrive and take millions and millions of dollars of our taxpayer money. So that's what I would like to see an economic impact study on. Representative Howard, and I would hope that you would join us in that effort to actually focus on something that's going to actually help us statewide, shutting down the fraud in our state that has gone on for years and for far too long and cost taxpayers billions of dollars when they are struggling just to pay their property taxes. I would highly encourage us to vote no on this bill. Get rid of this legislation that isn't going to do anything or go anywhere and actually help Minnesotans.
Thank you. I didn't hear a question in there. Chair. Thank you, Chair Nash.
Madam Chair, I believe you skipped over Representative Joy, who had sought recognition.
Oh, apologies for that. I will ask you, Chair Nash, if you would be willing to, since you want all of your members, every one of them, to speak on every bill. One moment, please. Would you be willing to allow us to meet this evening?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay, then we're going to limit conversation. We put a very tight timeline on today's agenda. Do you have any closing comments to this?
Representative Joy.
I'm not going to recognize Representative
Okay,
Joy.
Well, first we're going to seek
again,
a roll call.
Again, the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Since we're not going to
Madam
recognize.
Madam Chair, you're
Chair has
shut
decided
down a
to
voice.
Limit. This is just like the tax bill they had on the floor.
Chair Cleaveborn.
This is not representation.
Excuse
Chair.
Me, one moment.
You
one
have
moment,
not.
Please.
This is the chair again.
Excuse
silencing
me,
Representative
this side
of the
Howard,
aisle.
Do you have any closing comments?
This is the
to
chair
the bill
again,
amended.
Silencing this side of the aisle.
Representative Howard, you have the floor.
We should do studies like this on the George Floyd.
Thank you, Chair.
Governor Walz.
Thank you, Chair Cleaveborn.
Did not dispatch the guard.
Please continue. Right,
let's see what that study was.
Howard.
Chair Cleaveborn, I would like to just offer a brief closing statement. Mm-hmm. And it is to just to share one additional story shortly from my constituents in Minnesota. And I want you to put yourself in this room. On an early morning in January, a family of four living in an apartment, two parents with a son and a daughter, here legally, with legal status, no criminal record, In that morning, ICE agents found their way into the apartment building without a federal warrant. The word got out, and it was a very chaotic situation. In the chaotic situation, ICE agents detained and took the mother and took the daughter. This happened in the morning, and by that evening, the mother and the daughter were already in Texas. The father, who was the sole economic breadwinner, was faced with a choice. Am I going to work, or am I going to stay home with my kid? And I want you to imagine that son crying, pleading with that father to not leave because he doesn't want to lose his father. And I want you to put yourself in that room and tell me what you would do. Would you look that father in the eye and say you're going to help, or would you look away? And really, that's your choice with this bill. And all we're asking you to do is be curious, to want to learn more information. That's the first step. If we can do that, we can have more information and to be a legislature that can take action on our constituents and just maybe learn from the axiom that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. I encourage a yes vote.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, are you going to recognize me now?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'm going to say that not allowing a member to speak as a member of this committee with an election certificate who has a valid question is pretty outrageous, and that is not something that I think you want to create a reputation for doing. So I do have some questions of the author. My question is, from a methodological perspective, if anyone's ever done a survey or done deep research, you would outline what that methodology is. There's no conversation about methodology here, about things like what are the impacts, I think, as Representative Davis alluded to, around some of the counter protesters who created a disruption of their own and had an economic impact. That's not referenced in your bill at all. So I have concerns about that. And I find it refreshing, members and Madam Chair, that you have a sudden deep and abiding love for small business when you didn't seem to have either a deep or abiding love for the impact of paid family medical leave on what small businesses are going to go through and are now going through with the impact of that was foisted upon the state of Minnesota. You know, it always concerns me when we're basing a bill off of, and to quote the author, a bevy of anecdotal information. Anecdotal information is worrisome at best, so I find that's quite troubling. But once again, Madam Chair, I'm going to encourage you to not skip over our members. They have a voice, and when I'm done, I'll be happy to hear your comments. But just because this is DFL election fodder day that you want to come and bring some of these bills forward doesn't require us to vote them out. And indignation around that is fine if you'd like that. But, you know, there's no fiscal note there's direct appropriation. We have not received targets at all. We don't know what we're going to be spending on anything. So as I had previously stated, I request a roll call, and Chair Nash votes no.
Thank you. A roll call has been requested. I will ask the legislative assistant to please take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Cleaveborn, aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Davis, no. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, no.
Representative Anderson, no. Representative Clardy?
Aye.
Representative Clardy, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, yes. Representative Jones? Excused. Representative Jones, excused. Representative Joy?
Definitely no, since I was silenced in this committee.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Kraft?
Aye.
Representative Kraft, aye. Representative Nicolai?
Aye.
Representative Nicolai, aye. Representative Quam?
Yet.
Representative Quam, no. Representative Sexton?
No.
Representative Sexton, no.
Thank you. With a vote of 6 ayes, 7 nays, The motion does not prevail, and the bill is not re-referred to Ways and Means. And I would like to remind the committee that I have asked the co-chair to please allow us to come back this evening so all of your voices could be heard, all of your questions could be answered. My co-chair has responded no.
And Madam
Chair. The next bill we have up is House File 3781, Representative Moeller, to your bill.
As she's coming forward, Madam Chair, I will tell you that we have been given committee time, and it is up to the committee chair to define the parameters of the number of bills that you choose to bring forward, because there is never the promise of an evening session. That was your choice.
Representative Moeller, to your bill. I understand you have an A1, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, if you would please discuss the A1.
Yep, the A1 is adding some specific requirements to this commission to include members of the ACAS, the Capital Security Advisory Committee.
Thank you very much. And so I will move that House File 3781 be before us. The bill will be laid over, but I do ask that the A1 be adopted, so I'll move the A1. Members, we'll go to a vote on the A1, which includes these security members. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted to your bill as amended, Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this bill is creating a commission on legislative security. I think it goes without saying, it's probably pretty obvious why I'm bringing this bill in relation to the events of June 14th, the horrific events. And this commission is specific to looking at security needs for members and staff in legislative districts. I mentioned the ACAS in relation to the amendment that you all just adopted. And that commission, which Chair Nash and I both serve on, is really for looking at security issues here at the Capitol complex. That's in statute that commission's duty is to examine security issues on the complex and make recommendations related to that. And so we don't have anyone really looking at security needs of members in their legislative districts. And that's what this would do. It's modeled off of the Legislative Commission on Data Practices. And I will just note, I am aware of some other bills moving. Representative Green has a protective services unit. I know she's talking to folks across the aisle on that. So I'm glad this is being laid over. There may be a time when we look at combining these bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much. To member discussion to the bill as amended. Representative Kosner.
Thank you, and I appreciate that the bill's being laid over, so we're not really taking action on it, but having the discussion. Have you thought of the avenue, or maybe you have, and explain to me why it wouldn't just be easier to have the Capital Area Security Committee take a look at this in the districts and just change statute or their authorization to do that? Would that be easier than setting up a whole new commission?
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's certainly something we could consider. That security or ACAS has a number of other folks that weigh in, like very frequently with relation to like Capitol Security here and State Patrol. And so the intent with this was just to make it legislators to discuss that. And of course, bringing in experts and asking them questions, but a little bit of a different angle. But I certainly think that is something we could, you know, consider changing that statute and be open for discussion on that.
Follow up, Chair, Representative
Kosner. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is a good topic to have discussed. I don't know that we're at a point where we have a definitive agreed upon consensus of how to approach it. I did have the opportunity to hear Representative Green's bill in the Transportation Committee, and the big concerns there were a $4 million upfront and then almost $4 million, 3.2 or something, ongoing base spending. And in addition to the cost, and it will have some costs if this is something the legislature decides to do, but then also like how effective in the implementation. So it didn't move out of our committee. So we have to have the discussion, but I'm not sure we're at the point of really having a grasp on it. And there is currently law enforcement throughout the entire state. And so we'll continue to have those discussions, but I'm glad at this point we're just laying this over, because I'm sure this would have additional cost as well.
Thank you, Chair Kosner. Lead Nash.
Yeah.
Chair Nash.
Yeah. That was a couple years ago. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Mueller, you know, we've talked about this offline, and we've talked about this in the Capitol Area Security, and I think that this is a worthy effort. A couple things that I wanted to talk to you about is on 1.13, you've got conversation around percentages of members on there from the majority party or the minority party. We forgot to mention the Tiority Party. But I would say if member security is important, then you should make it equal numbers to be appointed to this and dispense with representation from majority or minority if that is the case. So I think that if you would like to gain my positive vote whenever this comes back, that a removal of proportional membership would be wise, because as you know, this is very important in my estimation. You were one of the first calls I made after I rounded up all of my members, which was my duty as whip. I called several of your other members and made sure that they were protected. So this is not something that is a partisan issue. Please don't make it so in your bill. I think that it should be equal representation. I would also say that I want to make sure that there isn't perhaps a way to dovetail this into what may already be going on in Capitol Security. You know, anytime that we're going to stand up something, to Representative Kosnick's point, that may incur a new cost, if there's a subcommittee of the Capitol Area Security that could be dedicated towards this, the money's already being spent on that, and we could avoid a new appropriation. But I think that it's important that we discuss this, because the underlying language that stood up the Capitol Security did not anticipate this, and I think that this is something quite obviously that we want to talk about, because that was an assault on this body and our members, and we lost friends, and other friends were injured. So please don't think that this is anything other than me encouraging you to make sure that we have equal representation of membership, because if we are going to protect members equally, it doesn't matter if at this point you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or whatever, there should be equal representation on this whenever it gets stood up.
And to that point, Chair Mueller, I would agree with Representative Nash. You know, we have two Republican parties on the floor now, and we don't know what it will be. So as we go forward with any of these in the future, we should always talk about how many parties we have in the body. We do have closing comments to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Chair Nash and Chair Kosnick for your thoughtful comments on that. And I think you're right. I think making it equal number representation makes sense. That's how ACAS is set up. That's actually how the Data Practices Commission is set up as well. So I will say it was drafted in the other body, but I really like that suggestion and am certainly willing to make that change. And I think we do really need to continue this conversation and look at all the bills that are moving this session and how we can look at this and make sure that both that we're safe as members and our staff are safe as members as well outside of the walls of this building and the Capitol complex. Thank you.
And we all appreciate your work on this. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3781, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Next, we will move on to Representative Curran, House File 3357. I will ask you, Representative Curran, we are behind schedule, so if we can keep our comments tight, I would appreciate that from you. And welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 3357 be re-referred to public safety. I do not know of any amendment to the bill, so if you'll go to the discussion of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. Members, House File 3357 is the bill to prohibit weapons on Minnesota State Capitol grounds, with exceptions for the professionals who are here serving in an official protective capacity. Keeping it brief, I'd like to thank co-author Representative Bonner for joining me today and offering her words on the bill.
With that, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, years ago I stood admiring the People's House sort of crisp against the blue sky, thinking that someday I was going to work here. And then in the next thought, Lord, if that's my destiny, you're going to have to help me find that path. But years later, I became a legislator, doing the job I love, serving my community. Caring for my neighbors is the calling of a lifetime. And somehow I believed that Minnesota Nice insulated this place. a North Star untouched by violence. But last June, that vision was shattered as a gunman took our beloved speaker, leaving a void we can't ever fill. Our colleagues were targeted, they were stalked, and they were hunted by a gunman prepared to kill me and my family. Everyone in this room carries invisible wounds that may never heal. But returning to this space has been harder than I anticipated, a place where I once took solace, where our leader taught us to rise above the partisanship, to take off our red jerseys and our blue jerseys, and to do the people's work. But doing that work with the threat of guns looming over our heads, over our words, is an immense weight to bear. And for me, that man means standing on the House floor trembling with fear. But that is what I will do. And I will stand bravely and defiantly on that floor because my community needs to see their representative standing up for them. But today we can forge a path together. We can honor our fallen leader. We can uphold our democratic process. In a sanctuary ruled by discourse and discussion, where passion and persuasion reign, let us create a sacred space for words, not guns. I urge your support of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. And I just want to acknowledge the trauma that you've been through. And I appreciate your coming back and testifying and talking about that trauma in public. I really value you for that. Members, is there any discussion to the bill?
Madam Chair, there are people who are here to testify.
You know what? My elbow was there and I missed it. So apologies. I would like to invite Anna Leamy to the testifier stand. Thank you so much, Chair Nash. It is a team effort. Thank you. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Co-chairs and members, my name is Anna Leamy, Director of Government Relations and Advocacy for the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. I'm here today in opposition to House File 3357. It is important to note that it is already a crime to possess or carry a firearm at the Minnesota State Capitol Complex without a Minnesota permit to carry. With weapon screening in place, bad actors carrying dangerous weapons cannot enter the core buildings of the State Capitol. The proposal does not target violent criminals. It targets peaceable citizens. Permit holders are statistically among the most law-abiding segments of our population. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's own reporting demonstrates that permit holders commit crimes at extremely low rates. House File 3357 would strip these vetted citizens of their ability to exercise self-defense rights precisely where they gather to petition their government. The Capitol complex is not an ordinary location. It is the seat of democratic participation. Minnesotans should not have to choose between exercising their First Amendment rights and exercising their Second Amendment rights. For more than two decades, the Minnesota State Capitol Complex has hosted robust and deeply debated issues, including firearms policy, while lawful permit to carry holders have been present. During that time, there has not been a pattern of violence caused by lawful permit holders attending hearings or engaging in civic participation. In fact, there has been none. In contrast, what our organization has observed over the years, including as recently as this past week, is that our staff, volunteers, and testifiers have faced threats and intimidation from individuals claiming to support additional firearms restriction. Expanding firearm prohibitions against peaceable citizens does not meaningfully address violent offenders. It instead restricts those who have demonstrated their commitment to lawful conduct. For these reasons, I respectfully urge you to vote no on House File 3357. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Excuse me, there is no clapping allowed. I appreciate your being here, but no clapping allowed in the audience. Representative Bonner, did you want to say something?
I do, actually. And I want to be very respectful and thoughtful about this. And I do appreciate people's Second Amendment rights. and I want to say this in the kindest way possible to Ms. Levy, but all due respect, but it's a very different story when it is your body on the line on that House floor. It is a very different to sit here and talk about that when it is not your body, with guns looming over your head. It is our job to support the democratic ideals while under threat. And I don't think that the general public understands the amount of threats we actually receive. My very first threat of violence in this body came before I ever stepped foot on the House floor. I had a man send me a meme of a man or of a gentleman looking down the barrel of a long gun that said, "I'm coming for you." And somehow we have made it acceptable over the years that these threats are just part of doing business. And for my male colleagues, I want to tell you that the data suggests that women in this body are far more likely to be the targets of those threats. And yet we just accept them as the course of doing business. There is no work environment which we should be asked to work under that threat. And it is the job of our leadership and of our state to step up and to protect the health and safety of every member of this body as they sit on that floor, as well as the general public, as they sit in these spaces to discuss our democratic principles. This is a place for passion, for conversation, for discussion. It is not a place for guns. And so respectfully, I would have to disagree.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Davis, Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For law-abiding citizens like myself, who is on that House floor, you see, I don't depend upon law enforcement to protect me. I don't depend upon the sergeant at arms to protect me. I depend on me to protect me, because at the end of the day, I want to go home to my little 3-year-old boy, Seth, my 4-year-old boy. I want to go home to them at the end of the day. I can guarantee you, law-abiding citizens aren't coming in here to have guns looming over our heads. And now you're trying to take away my right to protect myself, where I work for my people, who strongly support the Second Amendment and who strongly support that God-given right for me to have it on the House floor. It appears that you're all for constitutional rights except for in the people's house. And for that reason, I absolutely will be voting no on this bill. That is a very easy no, because I want us to be able to protect ourselves.
Thank you. And I would like to remind the members of this body that the individual who is accused, I want to be careful about how I say that, the individual who was accused of killing Speaker Emerita Hortman was a permit to carry holder, and that the woman who was just arrested with threats against Speaker Damuth was also a permit to carry holder. I'm going to go to Representative.
Madam Chair, what does that have to do with my rights at the Capitol?
Question
for you.
I was reminding the body of recent events. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excited to be able to talk this time. So in this legislation, you guys are trying to remove some get some gun controls in to protect everybody, correct?
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. In essence, yes, more so to ensure that the people in this building and on the complex who do carry guns are the exceptional professionals who are here to do so.
Representative Joy.
Just a quick follow-up. So when the Democrats had the trifecta my first year in here, why did they not pass all their gun legislation? Was there an issue in the caucus? Or how come, you know, we're looking at this now when we're a tied legislator and they're coming with gun control when we're tied and they know that they have to pull one Republican over? How come when they had the trifecta, they didn't move all this gun legislation?
We generally don't discuss motives behind legislation, but would you like to respond?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. And I understand your question. We had quite a full agenda, as any legislature does, regardless of who the majority is. We have a really short window of time to try to get a lot of priorities done around here. And we did select some priorities, and other priorities didn't come about. I would note, under the very real threats to legislators that we're facing today, that is very pertinent to this bill that Chair Cleavorn was so apt to point out, is that now both speakers under our agreement have faced threats of gun violence, and one of them has died. The other one has benefited from ERPO laws passed under the DFL trifecta.
Thank you very much. Representative Joy, I'm going to move to Representative Kosnick. All right, thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. This law affects anybody that comes into the Capitol complex. There are people that come to the Capitol complex that face threats walking to a parking lot because the park and ride behind the Capitol complex is one of the most dangerous park and ride or light rail stops in the whole system. And so I've heard of people coming here that work here on a regular basis, staff, government affairs people, that are very concerned when they have to leave the Capitol complex, and because of the threats outside this building, want to be able to protect themselves with a permit to carry if something awful should happen to them, or if they're just simply walking to their car across the light rail station and something happens. And guess what? A couple years ago, right before the State of the State, there was a murder or an attempted murder outside this building. This bill does not protect somebody outside that building. I'm not sure it protects people inside the building fully, but it does infringe on people's rights to protect themselves, whether it's in the building or outside the building. This bill goes too far, and we should not infringe on people's rights in this manner.
I didn't hear a question. You can have a brief comment, or I can move to the next.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Kosnick.
As a member of this committee, we are allowed to make statements on the bills.
Perfectly.
We don't need to be reminded that you didn't hear a question. You will know when I have a question.
Representative
just
Kosnick,
by simply stating.
I just asked the speaker if, or the
no,
representative
I'm,
if they wanted to comment.
No,
there
I'm directing
to
this
answer.
To you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to move on.
That it's condescending Kosnick. When you say you don't
Nash,
hear a question.
Do you have anything
it's very
like
condescending
that?
And it's not necessary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I once again, shutting my members down, I have the floor. Shutting our members down is absolutely unacceptable. They have a right to make comments and direct questions on the bill. But now that I have it, we're going to ask for a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there is a patchwork that gets created with this bill. Chair Kosnick just pointed that out. I am a permit to carry holder, and I absolutely, there's never been any mystery about that. I am a permit to carry holder, and I am one of the most scrutinized people before that is granted. Representative Kern, I believe you used to work in law enforcement, and I'm sure in the sheriff's department, you saw that process going on. It is not something where you wet your finger and you're like, they're good to go. No, you're scrutinized heavily. You're scrutinized once a year as well to make sure that during the duration of your permit life that you are still allowed to be a permitted person. Those people create very, very few crimes. Now, I passed a bill a number of years ago that allowed for your permit to carry to constitute notification here at Capitol Grounds. That was my bill, 2015. Prior to that and since that, there has not been one incident here on the Capitol grounds, not one. What Chair Kosnick pointed out is that outside of here, by people who are intent on doing crime that were not permit to carry holders, they did perpetrate crimes. And what this effectively does is it makes a very broad and easy victim list for any people who would like to be able to avail themselves of, as the Supreme Court said, an individual right to own a gun. So I have a problem with this. Once again, heavily, heavily vetted people. And, you know, and you talk about the threats that you receive. Well, as I have offered bills here, I too have been threatened by people who were wearing anti-gun T-shirts who came up and said, we hope, Representative Nash, that you are shot and killed in front of your family. So let's wrap our minds around that, folks. Let's wrap our minds around the fact that you would like to put this into law, and the people who are cheering you on from the sidelines would like to see me shot and killed in front of my family. Are we okay with that? I can't think that we are. But once again, the patchwork that this creates is if a guest of mine comes down here to the Capitol and they may choose to park in a lot that is actually here on Capitol grounds, and they are a permit to carry holder, and they do recognize that there is a level of concern that they would like to make sure that they are protected against, this takes that out of play. Furthermore, with the implementation of metal detectors that are here and up and running and are also running outside of the gallery, Representative Bonner, right now, so that only the people who are permit to carry holders can get into the gallery, this presupposes that the people who are permit to carry holders are the ones that are intent on perpetrating a crime. And I would point out from a data privacy perspective, I'm going to channel my inner Chair Scott, that it is not known verifiably that the people who committed these crimes were 100% permit to carry holders, because it's private data and the public is not allowed to have access to it. Now, the police have intimated that they believe that they were, but it is not an incontrovertible fact. So, I'm not done yet. This is a very troublesome bill. And this is, I think, certainly I understand what the emotion behind this is, but when we go after constitutional rights in a very short amount of time, in a very short hearing, where, Madam Chair, I believe, because I looked, the amount of time allocated towards the conversation last year around what would the state fossil be was about the same time that was allocated for this particular hearing. This is a big issue. We should be giving this perhaps its own hearing day, but we're not. We're going to try to run this through. And I will tell you, we're not running this through because we're voting no, and it's going to not make it out of committee because it is a very hastily written bill. It creates a patchwork of a lack of safety for people who wish to avail themselves of their constitutional rights. And I cannot support, will not support, will never support something like this. So with that, Madam Chair, I will again renew my request for a roll call and encourage members to vote no.
Thank you. A roll call has been granted. Do you have any closing comments for your bill? Thank you.
I do, Chair Cleavorn. Thank you so much. There are several comments I want to address, and I know we're running out of time, but there are a few things that, there have been a lot of comments directed without reply, so if you would indulge. This bill has been around for years, as have many members of this committee, and I can assure the public today that what we're seeing is yet another failure of the House GOP to even entertain compromise. It's an election year, and they don't want to admit DFLers are bringing urgent, relevant, thoughtful solutions. The House is
Madam
tied.
Chair, those comments are out of order.
I will ask you not to impugn motive. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, we hear it on the House floor, and it's quite frustrating.
Excuse me, Representative Kuznick. Representative Curran has the floor.
I have higher expectations that we would bring. If a bill like this would indeed take a full day, I would assume that in the interest of the people, that there would be several amendments and language changes, and it wouldn't just be an entire side without representation from women offering comments all day long. There are some facts.
Madam Chair, once again, we are going to talk about the impugning of motives. I would urge you to control the
author of the bill. Excuse me, I would like you to know that we've already said we do not impugn motives in this
But yet we've done it just again right now.
I've said it to two Democrat representatives, and we continue to have interruption without being recognized by the chair. Please,
okay, then, Madam Chair,
Curran,
point of order,
because
we are under the rules of the House here. Point of order, Madam Chair.
state your point of order.
My point of order that I hope you will find well taken is that we cannot impugn motives, whether we are on the floor or in committee, because we are under Masons, we are under the rules of the House. Representative Kurt,
I've already asked our members.
It just happened again, Madam Chair.
I've already asked our members not to do that. Please, may we give our representative the courtesy of closing her bill, or their bill. Please, will you please go ahead? Thank you. I apologize to you for this committee's behavior today. Would you please?
Yes.
You may start anew if
you
wish.
Are we imputing motives there, Madam
Chair?
No,
I'm not. I am not.
Behavior is a motive.
You have the floor, Representative Curran.
Thank you. I'll offer some facts. Legally purchased and legally carried weapons have been and always will be contributors to gun violence. Another fact, members, staff, and the public regularly experience harassment, toxicity, and hostility in this building, particularly in the current environment we're in. Fact, members of this legislature find it acceptable to use social media to say things about other members that may be untrue or harmful. Fact, members who bully other members on social media also carry guns. This isn't safe. Fact, members who bully the public also carry guns. This isn't safe. Please support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. A roll call has been requested. I would like to remind the members, if they're unaware, but North Dakota, Alabama, Arkansas, Texas, those states also have this ban in place. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair.
Thank you very much. A roll call has been requested. The chair votes aye.
Chair Cleavorn, aye. Chair Nash?
No.
Representative Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Davis?
For the protection of women's Second Amendment rights, I vote no.
Representative Davis, no. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, no.
Representative Anderson, no. Representative Clardy?
Clardy, aye.
Representative Clardy, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, yes. Representative Jones, excused. Representative Joy? Representative Joy, no. Representative Koznick?
No.
Representative Koznick, no. Representative Kraft?
Aye.
Representative Kraft, aye. Representative Nicolai?
Aye.
Representative Nicolai, aye. Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Quam, no. Representative Sexton?
No.
Representative Sexton, no. Chair, there are 6 ayes, 7 nays, and 1 excused.
With 6 ayes, 7 nays, 1 excused, the motion does not prevail and the bill is laid over. Thank you for being here today. Next, we have Representative Kraft, House File 3737. I will move that House File 3737 be laid over. The bill is before the committee. Representative Kraft, when you're ready, I would ask that you please speak to the A1 amendment, and I will move the A1 amendment. When you're ready, please begin.
Thank you. The A1 gets it in the state I would like it, and it talks about this discussion here about goal setting, and it just says those goal settings should be consistent with state statute. I'd ask for your support on the A1.
Thank you. In order to put the bill in the order of the author would prefer, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. HF 3737, it's a practical bill that codifies existing efforts to manage state building operations efficiently. State agencies have reported energy use since 2004. And water in law and water use since 2017 under executive order. This bill clarifies those reporting requirements, streamlines energy reporting, and formally establishes water reporting in statute. It also requires agencies to maintain energy and water benchmarks, set goals, and keep plans for cost-effective improvements with a 15-year or less payback. Best practices aimed at reducing operating costs. Agencies already meet similar standards for new construction and major renovations. This bill ensures that approach applies consistently across the broader building portfolio and places current executive order requirements into law. This is a modest, common sense step that supports accountability and cost control. With that, I'll turn it over to Marcus Grubbs from the Department of Administration.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. When you're ready, state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Yes. Chair Cleavorn, my name is Marcus Grubbs. I'm the Director of the Office of Enterprise Sustainability at the Department of Administration. Briefly about our effort and respect of your time, our office was created in 2017 to bring state agencies together around some shared goals, including energy and water conservation and efficiency. We were brought into statute in 2023, and then we are focused on providing technical assistance agencies a reporting framework in which they can report on their progress towards goals, and then also a planning framework to establish enterprise-wide plans. We have six goals. You can learn more at our website, sustainability.mn.gov. The ones that are important for today's discussion are energy, which is our effort to reduce our energy use per square foot in our operations like this by 30%, and our water use in operations by 15%. So we provide technical assistance in across these areas, including making sure agencies have access to energy and water audits, and then we also help try to plan so that they can accomplish that work. And this bill really just helps prioritize that planning work and codifies the reporting work they're already doing. So we are clarifying reporting requirements, establishing water reporting, requiring energy, water, and benchmarks, energy and water benchmarks and goals, which they're already doing, but this again codifies it, requires planning to implement those conservation projects, and then it directs us to maintain enterprise-wide goals at admin.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't see any further amendments or further testifiers. I understand Representative Sexton has a question.
Yes, Chair, I have several questions. So I read this bill very closely last night. So I observed the history really is more of a carrot sense of reporting. Would you agree? You're just reporting. You're not doing anything else.
Representative Kraft. Would you like your testify? Mr. Yeah. Grubbs.
Mr. Grubbs. Thank you. Chair Cleavorn, Representative Sexton, we are reporting, but we also provide technical assistance for identifying energy conservation improvements, for example, or water conservation improvements. And that might be for, I mean, a basic example would be LED lighting conversions, right? We can assist with, counting fixtures, doing the math, getting them there, or directing them to programs are already available through utilities and through getting those utility rebates.
Sure.
Representative Sexton.
I did understand it that way. However, we're deleting that part, which I perceive as more of a carrot, where it's really just referring to good practices. And now under page 3, section 3, subsection 4, it tells the agencies they must maintain energy and water benchmarks and goals developed in partnership with the commissioner for buildings under their custodial control. So I just want to focus on the word must. And since we are laying this over, I don't know that that shouldn't be changed and go back to more of a recommendation. But my question is, how do we define custodial control? Does that apply to leased spaces as well, leased office spaces?
Mr. Grubbs.
Chair Cleavorn, thank you, Representative Sexton. We don't, this one is probably a good question for council to actually answer, and we don't typically include that in our reporting. So it would be the facilities that are owned by the state. But what happens from time to time, for example, is one agency will have custodial control over one facility, but it's technically owned by another agency. And so we use the word custodial control.
Representative Sexton.
So potentially, since it's being laid over. We can clarify that because we do lease a lot of spaces, and we do have requirements for our landlord. So we want to make sure that that's not misinterpreted. So I'll skip down a little bit. Is there a fiscal note for compliance? Because you're talking about expanding your dashboard that's already in existence, correct?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is it's not anticipated to have a fiscal cost, but
Mr. Grubbs.
Mr. Grubbs.
Chair Cleaver, that's right. We are sending that fiscal note back here shortly, and we are not saying that there's a cost associated with it.
Representative Sexton, was there any other?
Correct. Yes, ma'am, there is. So I find it hard to believe that we're increasing reporting. We're making this must maintain, but there's no additional cost to your organization or any other state organization for this requirement.
Representative Kraft.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Sexton, this reporting is happening already today by executive order in a must scenario. So it's already happening today. So I think that's a key thing as to why you're not seeing a significant change.
Representative Sexton, and then I'm going to move on to Representative Anderson.
So I just see this bill going down more of a compliance as opposed to, which is more of the stick perspective. And I see with everything that we already have installed in many of our buildings, and it's continued to evolve with renovations, low-flow toilets, restroom faucets that automatically shut off. So I'm really trying to figure out why we're changing the practices and moving towards a compliance requirement, which may now drive supervisors who have to report and potentially have to compete against one another in the future as we continue down this road. You know, are we actually going to give our employees bathroom passes to make sure they only flush once or twice a day? I mean, people do strange things when they're forced to comply. Thank As you have it now, this bill or the current legislation is more of just a reporting requirement.
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Sexton, as I said in the answer to the previous question, this reporting is already happening. We as a state government, we own these buildings. We're saying we want to make them operate as most as efficiently as possible. And frankly, your comment about bathroom passes, I find absurd.
All right, again, I'm going to ask about motive and intent. We want to keep the committee respectful. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we've heard several times that we're already doing this, which really begs the question, why are we doing this bill? I can't see codifying these things. It sounds like your folks are doing a credible job of tracking this and doing the best job you can to conserve, and to say we're going to codify these things to me is not necessary. It's like saying, we're going to do this one year, the next year, let's not do it this year. But now it's codified, so we're going to do it every year. I just don't feel this is necessary. You're doing it already, and I don't think the bill is necessary, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you spend any time with our chief clerk, you'll hear him say that you don't necessarily have to do something by law, that you can just have done. And it sounds like you're doing it already. So I would agree with my colleagues that if we're going to codify something that's already being done, I'm really not sure why. There's going to be a cost. There has to be a cost. If you're mandating an increase in compliance and reporting, I'm sorry. I've been around here long enough to know that when an agency or department finds an opportunity to require something, there's probably going to be somebody else hired to do more work, and there's going to be a fiscal cost. Representative Sexton did this for a living for many, many years, and we've talked about this, and I trust his insight on this, and I just don't understand why this is something that has to get codified. I believe we're laying this over. Okay, we're laying this over. So I just don't think that this is something that we need to get overly wrapped around the axle on, but I certainly think that we do not need to do this.
And closing comments, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for hearing this bill. This is happening. It is working. And we're trying to put this so that it stays in place regardless of the vagaries of one administration to the next. We've got something that's working. Let's keep it working. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will renew my motion that House File 3737, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. We are going to move to the Cleavorne bill, House File 3621. And I move that bill before the committee. Vice Chair Bonner will take the gavel.
Thank you. Members, we'll give Chair Cleavorne just a moment to get herself settled.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Chair Cleavorne, when you're ready, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you very much. I'm going to keep my opening comments very brief. I have Mr. Moore with me from MMB who can answer technical questions if you have them. I also have an A1 amendment that I would like to move for adoption. The A1 is an amendment that was brought to us by Minkoji, and so I would ask for your adoption.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Cleavorne. Are there any questions to the A1? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Could you repeat who brought
Minkoji?
Minkoji? Okay.
The Minnesotans for Open Government.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, we'll go ahead to a motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the ayes have it. The A1 is adopted. Chair Cleavorne, now that we have the bill in the shape you would like it, to your bill.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to be very, very brief in the introduction of this bill. It takes what has been temporary withholding and moves it to permanent withholding. I would also like to thank Chair Nash for joining in the authorship of this bill. This bill would strengthen the ability of agencies to stop payments to program participants when fraud is suspected. It would lower the standard of proof from a preponderance of the evidence to credible allegation. It expands definitions to permit withholding from individuals as well as businesses. It would allow other agencies to notify each other and follow suit if a potential fraudster collects payments from more than one agency. And this makes the withholding authority permanent. It's a very important piece of work that we've all discussed, and we all believe that no amount of fraud is ever acceptable. And so with that, members, I have Mr. Moore here. If you have technical questions about why and how, and I would ask for a yes vote.
All right. We do not have anyone signed up to testify on this bill. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify? All right.
Madam Chair, I would like to make sure that the motion is to move the bill to as amended to Judiciary.
Yes.
Thank you.
We do not have any testifiers, is there any discussion to the bill? All right. Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Cleavorne, for bringing forth this legislation. Thank you, Chair Nash, for your efforts in wanting to stop fraud in our state. I got it pulled up here. This is a good bill because Lou Ragus just reported that the latest Feeding Our Future fraud suspect received the most child care assistance program funds, so CCAP, in the state of Minnesota just last year. So involved in the Feeding Our Future fraud and still receiving child care assistance for a fraudulent daycare. So thank you so much for bringing forth this legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Davis. Any other further discussion? Seeing none, Chair Cleavorne, did you want to close your bill?
No, it's a very important bill, and I think the beauty of this bill today is that we are all stating that none of us accept an ounce of fraud. It is never allowed. It harms Minnesotans. It denies people of the services that they deserve and that we have allocated resources for. So, members, I appreciate your yes vote in moving House File 3621 as amended to Judiciary. And I would ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
My apologies. I did not ask. Chair Nash, did you want to give a closing comment?
Yeah.
Apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Cleaborn, thanks for asking me to work on this with you. It is something that we need to do because we do need to take a much stiffer approach on shutting this down. Mm-hmm. So I'll say this for the first time today. Members, vote yes.
All right. Thank you, Chair Nash. Seeing no further discussion, I renew my motion to move House File 3621 as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? And the ayes have it.
Madam Chair, before we adjourn, since we have 10 minutes, maybe we could squeeze Representative Freiberg's bill in.
All right. Representative Freiberg, would you like to come up to the testifiers table?
Representative Freiberg, would you like to move your bill before the committee, please?
Sure. Is this being laid over? Is that the intention? Okay, yes. I will move that House File 3664 be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right. And to your bill.
Thank you. The Compensation Council, so this bill deals with the Compensation Council, whose duties include determining constitutional officer and agency head salaries. The 24 members are appointed by the judicial branch, the governor, and the four legislative caucuses. Appointments to the council are to be made in January of odd-numbered years, and final determinations are due by April 1st. The LCC does the best they can to get the council started with as much time as possible for the members to meet and deliberate, but in the last two biennia, they have not been able to start their work until March. So this is a simple proposal. It would extend the deadline for the report on agency head and constitutional officer pay from April 1st to May 1st. This would allow more time for analysis and deliberation among the council, and the final report would still be due during the legislative session. And I have a representative here in case there are any questions. So thank you for your consideration.
Okay. And Representative Freiberg, I don't know of any amendments to your bill. Is there any discussion from the committee? Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Freiberg, so you're asking for an extra month of time?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nash. That is correct. It's simple. There's one change on line 1.16. It changes April to May.
And Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nash. So is there like a deep-seated conspiracy that we're missing here, Representative Freiberg, just to end the day on a little bit of levity?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Co-Chair Nash. I'm desperately trying to think of something that this could possibly be a conspiracy for,
some
but I'm
black
not
helicopter
enough.
Moment
Maybe,
that we're missing.
Maybe you've got
Definitely
something.
Not.
Okay.
Representative Freiberg, you know that I dislike conspiracy corners. So, Chair Nash, is there any other?
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to bring a little levity to the end of our day. This is fine.
Vice Chair Davis is asked to be recognized after the chair. Is that all right
That's
with you,
fine.
Chair?
And Mr. Chair, I apologize for that. Thank you, Madam Chair. But your question stirred something into my heart. This doesn't have something secretly to do with changing daylight savings times, does it?
There's a bill for that next week. Would you like to close your bill, Chair Freiberg?
No.
Thank you very much. And with that, I will renew the motion that House File 3664 be laid over for possible inclusion. I would like to remind the members that our microphones are hot, so anything you say will be heard on record. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.